Welcome to the Salka Poetry Project recordings. This has been funded in part by a grant from the Boulder Arts Commission, an agency of the Boulder City Council.
That was Ana Maria Hernando, and this is Kenneth Robinson, and this is one in a series of interviews with creatives that we appreciate and admire about their experiences with art and poetry. We've undertaken this project because of our love of poetry and poets and art and artists and translation and translators.
And we have today here Bud Shark from Sharks Inc. Thank you, Bud.
Thank you.
For being here. I'm going to introduce you with reading some of your bio. Sharks Inc. has printed and published an extensive and eclectic body of prints, collaborating with over 150 distinguished and innovative contemporary American artists since opening in 1976. Master printer, director Bud Shark works side by side with invited artists during every aspect of the collaborative printmaking process. Techniques used in the studio include lithography, monotype, and using all kinds of materials, always looking for the innovations. Prints published by Sharks Inc. are included in numerous private and public collections, including the Museum of Modern Art in New York, the Whitney Museum of American Art, also in New York, the Metropolitan Museum of Art, Yale University Art Gallery, the New York Public Library, the Library of Congress, the Art Institute of Chicago, the Hirschel
right.
Museum, and oh my God, do you want to know of a list of museums in the States? Their work is in all of them. Bud Shark was born in Devil's Lake, North Dakota. He received a BS from University of Wisconsin, Madison, and an MA from the University of New Mexico, Albuquerque. In 1976, he opened Shark's Lithography Limited in Boulder, Colorado, and relocated the studio as Sharks Inc. to Lyons, Colorado in 1998.
That's all correct. Yeah.
Yes, I know.
It's all true.
It's what happens when you go and you look into people's websites.
Yeah.
So translation, talking about translation, we were talking. So with Kenneth, our love of poetry, one point where it always finds itself is in the translation. Kenneth is a poet and I have translated his poems into Spanish, and I write in Spanish and I translate my poems into English, and Kenneth helps me also with that process. And for me, translation, and when I translate and I hold a word, and each word in their own language has a shape and a color and a weight, mm-hmm. and a whole universe that walks with that word. So when I'm in front, and in translation, when you find you are looking for how you can translate this word into another language, and it will never be the same word.
There's not always an equivalent.
Yeah. But there is this proximity. They come closer. And I see them, these two words that move in similar universes, but in different languages, they are more like lovers. And they talk to each other. And they real
yes.
things.
And they're different words, but they understand each other.
Yes.
Right. And they reveal themselves to each other. And they're revealed in the process. So when you and I are collaborating with poetry, and then you're looking for the Spanish translation of my English, when you share that with me and give me the Spanish meaning, it opens up the word to me in a new way, and opens up my poem to me in that way. So that quality of translation where I find out what I'm saying more of what I'm saying by hearing what it is in Spanish. And Bud Shock's a translator. He translates an artist's work and original piece of art into another form, and through your own being and your own language, something new is created there.
Yeah, well, that's interesting, because there is a lot of translation, because language is a lot of times inadequate when you're talking to an artist about something that you're going to make that's visual.
Yeah.
And many times I've been discussing something with an artist and they use language differently and we get off on the wrong track. And it's like we start producing plates and pulling some proofs and seeing what we've got, and suddenly realize that I misunderstood the artist, or the artist hasn't explained themselves so that I understood, and consequently we have to go back and start over. But language is kind of inadequate. I mean, some artists, I've had a situation where artists sort of reverse my sense of color and language. We're talking about color and they talk about cool and warm colors opposite to what the way I understood them, and most other people do, but some artists. It's an interesting process, and I understand what you're talking about in translating from one language to another. It's communicating ideas with words is tricky.
Yeah, you guys are communicating through color, or through your feelings about color.
Well, color is a little easier because we can do a sample and do a drawdown on a piece of paper and see what it looks like. It's like, is this the color you want? It's like, sometimes it's not, and it's like a little more of this, a little more of that. And then a lot of it's relative, and you print one color and that looks fine, and then you print the second color on the print and it shifts what the first color looks like, and the second color isn't quite what you want. So there's a lot of adjusting to do. It's a little bit like Anna was talking about in translating and finding the approximate word. It's like you find the approximate color.
But there is a kind of translation that you do in your work that it always, so I have worked with Bud Shock several times, and then Kenneth and I have done also a project with you.
Right.
And here we come, I mean, we come, Kenneth had never done anything close to that, but then for me, in all my artistic expressions, I paint, I do installations, but I had never done a print.
Right.
And working with you, Bud, is like dancing with an amazing tango dancer.
I don't.
You dance. Go. You don't. But you do other things. You know, it's like you are dancing with this amazing tango dancer. It's the first time you are dancing tango, and suddenly your feet are doing things that you didn't know your feet could do. And that's how working with you is. I mean, suddenly you reveal my work, or I suppose this happens to all of the artists, and the world goes in down a road that I had never imagined. So, I mean, you are such a master at that. And in that way, I think you are a translator and what's the other word?
Collaborator. Collaborator.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and I can't do any of it without an artist involved to suggest or show me something that they're interested in and talk about what we're going to do. And then, yeah, I interpret what they're saying and try and figure out interesting ways to translate their work into print. And I always approach it as a very creative process. We don't usually copy things. We base things on other work, but we're not making reproductions. So it's fully creative process. And as you know, from both of you, from working in the studio, you have to make a plate or a drawing for each color, and we don't know what it's going to be until we start putting all those colors together and near the end. So there's a certain amount of faith, and context is really important, how it all works together in the end.
I love that you said that about faith, because we were going to ask you about that. And yeah, just in that process, when you're in the unknown of the creative process, would you talk about just like where you place your faith?
Mm-hmm. Well, let's see. I guess I have a certain amount of confidence, and I can sort of see ahead a ways where the artist may not be able to, just because of all the experience I have
making
prints. And you just sort of have to trust, and it's like we'll try the first color and we'll try the second color, and hopefully by the time we get them all on, it'll look fine. Sometimes we have to add another plate. I just working on a project with Hung Liu, and we had a print and we thought it was all completed, and we even gave a talk at BMOCA, the Boulder Museum of Contemporary Art, showed that piece and talked about it, and the next day in the studio I was looking at that print going, there's something, it needs something else, and we added another plate to mute some of the colors. And in this case, I had faith in that was going to work, but the artist wasn't so sure. And I said, well, we'll try it, and if it looks fine, we'll do it. If it doesn't, we won't do it. But the artist, of course, agreed, and you can't really know until you take it all the way to the end, to all the colors are on it, and and it's finished. And then, you know, with printmaking, you can go back, you can change a plate, you can reproof it. It's not like we've printed the edition, we've done a proof, we get the print that we like, and then once the artist agrees, then we print the edition. So it's possible to go back and make adjustments. But the early stages are, I've just been realizing this lately, the early stages where we're, for the artist, it's sort of working blind. For me, it's a little less blind because I can anticipate what another color is going to be, but that's really tense. And so I have to reassure artists a lot and myself that it's going to work and proceed. And until we have something that's more or less finished, you can't really tell. So it's not so much faith as forging ahead.
Taking a look at it and seeing it. Yeah. Well, there's a trust in what you feel when you see it.
Yeah.
Or there's a trust in it needs something else. That's where you were with that piece.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And, you know, that happens. Sometimes everything works just great, and sometimes we've gotten to the end and put what we call the key plate, which has the most information on it and sort of pulls everything together. We put that on it and go, oh no, that doesn't work. And we start over. And if we have to, we'll remake plates. Often we just have to adjust colors and start over and reproof.
Yeah. And I know that you you choose the artist you work with.
Yes.
It's up to you. And you see something in an artist that you say, hey, I want to work, and I'd love to hear about what those qualities are, or what it is about the artist you say, yeah, I want to work with them.
Well, it's hard to describe because it's sort of a gut feeling when I see the work. But I've come to see it as being a kind of vicarious kind of interest in the artist's work. It's like I want to be involved in that work. And I get, you know, I would get joy out of making that work or be challenged by it. And maybe an artist's work that's very unlike any other work that I've done, and I'm interested in the challenge of figuring out how to make that, translate that work into prints. So it's, in a way, I have very selfish reasons. It's out of my own interest in printmaking and different approaches to making prints that, and I like being challenged by the work a lot.
You know, that's another, always what comes through is your high standards, how you move earth and sky, so that print you are working with is the best that it can be.
Yeah.
And it's over and over and over again. And you know, as an artist working with you, is that trust mm-hmm. that develops, that I know you're not going to give up.
Right.
That you will keep going with the honesty of coming back after the talk that was given, the right. peace shown and all right. that, and saying, you know what, I think this needs something else.
Right.
How you are always, it seems, you know, working towards the best that it's possible.
Yeah, well, that's part of my satisfaction is doing it really well. There's two aspects to what I do. One is the collaboration with the artist, where we're figuring it out and making the plates and working together to produce the print. But then there's the actual printing of the print, which requires a whole different kind of focus. And you know, the collaboration is very intense, and we're trying to understand each other, and it's a real dialogue going on. And then once it's established, then it's my assistant and I in the studio going in and printing 60 prints with one color one day and 60 prints with another color the next day, and each trying to make each one of those prints perfect. And it's a kind of focus, and it's almost meditative. You need to be totally into what you're doing at the time, because if you're inking a plate and you've got a pattern to ink it so you don't get any marks and it's uniformly inked, and you have to repeat that every single time, you can mess up a print. And if it's six plates and you mess up one print each color, each plate, there's six prints gone from the edition. So we print more than we need to, and hopefully we always end up with enough. Mm-hmm. But it's that kind of focus that I also like. I mean, if I only had that dialogue with artists and collaborated all the time, I would burn out. And if I only did that kind of focus printing mm-hmm. all the time, and only had that kind of focus, I would burn out. So there's two kinds of very different aspects to what I do that I like the challenge of both of them. One's a kind of perfectionism in terms of the printing. The other is a kind of challenge to make the best piece we can make.
Mm. I've been witness to that focus and that perfectionism. Both seeing you and Anna collaborate with her work, with her extraordinary flower pieces, and also with Salka Archipelago that we all three did
right.
in collaboration. And it's such a thing it's poetry to watch you and your assistant, whose name I want
Evan,
to include.
Evan Colbert.
Evan Colbert.
Right.
Just moving about your studio, doing your thing, and the quality, the rhythm of that, and moving from these massive rollers that are applying this paint to the paper, the ink to the paper, and watching you guys move from one station to another. And I just wanted to hear from you, Bud, about your experience of the poetic in your life and what that's like for you.
Well, let's see. One of the first prints I ever made of my own was actually an image with a poem that I wrote.
That you wrote?
Did I write? Yes. Oh. And everybody in my family has one, and they have it hanging on their wall. It embarrasses me every time I look. Well, because this was done when I was in college, and it's a little naive in a way, but I thought it was brilliant when I wrote it. Of course.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't read a lot of poetry, but when I do, I enjoy it a lot. I like this slightly abstract quality of it. The meaning isn't always immediately clear. I like thinking about it. It's an amorphous form, not always, but often more amorphous kind of literature communication. I really enjoyed working on the Salka Archipelago project with you both, partly because of the poetry. Mm. I hadn't done any other prints, you know, maybe one other print that actually had a poem printed on it as part of the piece.
I remember I gave you a copy of my poetry book from years ago, first time that we met, and you kept it overnight. And the next morning at breakfast, you had said, I like your poems. They're funny, right? I was like, okay, this man gets my poetry. I'm so grateful for that.
Yeah. Well, you're not always sure you're interpreting
it
correctly.
Yes, right. Going back to translation.
Yeah, exactly.
So you have talked about all these different parts of the printing and the challenges. And is there something in particular that you love always, that it's this constant part that you always love about what you do?
Well, in every print, there's the way the ink looks on the paper. I mean, I still love seeing the way, you know, when it's printed on the paper and it's printed well and the layer is uniform and the colors you want, that's really satisfying and something I always get something from. One of the most interesting and exciting parts is when we have printed a color and then we get another plate and we're printing the second color to pull that proof off of the plate, and you sort of pick up one corner and you start to see it, and I'm the one who gets the first view, and the artists are all going, what's his look on his face going to be? And it's always a surprise, and I go, oh, and sometimes it's it's really good, but sometimes it's, it's not quite right. And it has to fit together, the color has to be right. So that is always interesting and satisfying most of the time.
Ah, that moment of discovery.
Yeah.
That's beautiful to hear you describe that.
Yeah, it's... And I know the artists are waiting, but I always see that first corner, and then it looks pretty good, and then you peel it off, and then get a little chance to look at it a little more, and maybe it's not quite right. It's good, but maybe we need to adjust that color, or make it more transparent, or all this.
I like how you talk about the inks, because the first thing when you come into Bud's studio, the first thing before seeing anything is smelling the inks.
Yes.
And your heart goes, oh, yes.
I don't notice the smell anymore because I'm used to it. But there are different times in the studio. When we're cleaning up, we use some solvents, so you smell those. When the ink's drying, it gives off a different odor. And sometimes we open up drawers with prints in them that have been in the drawer for a long time, and the prints still smell of ink.
Right.
And all those odors are often quite different, but everybody comments when they walk in the studio, the ink.
Yeah.
And I do like the smell, but I don't always notice it.
When you've lived a poet's life, an artist's life, like you have, you know, I think there comes a place where there's this longing to offer something to the world in terms of, you know, others being able to find that place in their own hearts.
Mm-hmm.
Anna has also spoken to me about your archives, all the artists that you've worked with, and just the body of work that you've created. And I would just love to hear you speak, Bud, about what you want to pass on.
Well, We have an archive, and we will be finding a home for it eventually. And there are now like 2,600 pieces in that archive.
Yeah. Wow.
And some of them are studies, some of them are finished prints, some of them are things that were used to make the print. It's a really rich group of work, and I think it'd be important to have it in a place where it's accessible, where people can study it and students can look at it, and that would be very satisfying to me. But the act of making the work is the thing that I get the most pleasure from, and you know, after the prints are done, I'm very proud of them and I like them, and we need to sell them to be able to continue, but it's actually the act of collaborating with the artist and making the prints that really is what keeps me going. And sometimes I think, it's a very selfish thing But in fact, I know that the because of the collaboration, it's not selfish. But yeah. The joy I get is a very personal thing from the rich collaborations that I have with artists like both of you, and then the making of those prints, the satisfaction of seeing them and knowing I made them and that I'm proud of them.
Yeah. Thank you so much for speaking about just the joy inside of those moments.
Right? Yeah, when it's not always joy. Sometimes you're tearing your hair out, and we've had prints that went bad that we had to do the great hopes that I had for, especially complicated things where we're gluing things together and putting one kind of paper on top of another kind of paper, and it all seems fine, and then you send the prints to the artist and they sign them and they get them back and the papers are coming apart. And so it's partly because we try things that haven't necessarily been done much, or we're pushing the boundaries a little bit. So we take risks and then we have to go back and fix them.
And you still want to do it
even
when the failures happen.
Yeah.
Well, one of the prints we did, I was using, at the time, these fluorescent colors, and there are no fluorescent inks. And Bad was so fascinated, looking for how can we make these inks? How can we make these inks?
Right. I had some... There are some fluorescent inks, but not necessarily for lithography. Mm-hmm. And I had worked with another artist who was mixing... And we'd gotten a whole range of fluorescent powders to use to mix inks. But to mix the powders so that they actually print, as you know from... But we did figure it out, and we made the fluorescent inks and used them on your prints. And it's a color like no other. The vibrancy of those fluorescent powders are...
But there's another part of what you do, which is like... making it so safe for the artist to come into your space and do this experiment together. And I've got to be a recipient of that. And I'm really grateful for that part of you that so cherishes the creative moment that you can make that kind of safety and invite the artist into your home and live with them for a week or two,
right,
and create all that. So I just I admire your heart in that way, and I thank you for all you are as an artist and all you give to the artists that come to you.
Thank you. Many of the artists like Anna and others I've worked with many times, and so that initial welcoming into the studio and making them feel at home and comfortable. You know, most artists work alone in their studios, and so to actually come to somebody else's studio and have somebody waiting and watching everything you do and input into how the work might go, and then also it's a residency, so the artists stay with us, as you know. And so that all of that is the first time can be a little tricky, right, but I think we've done it enough where Barbara and I can put the artists at ease. But there's this a little tense for the first day or two where we're trying to decide what we're going to do, and we're trying to figure each other out. But in most cases, I've met the artist and know their work, and we've talked some about working together, and I haven't had too many disasters.
No, you haven't. As your archive attests.
Yeah.
Yes. Thank you, Bob.
Yeah. Oh, you're welcome.
For being today with us.
Well, it's great to talk to you, and thank you for your questions.
Great pleasure to hear you speak about art, but thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And again, thank you to the Boulder Arts Commission for the partial fund of this experiment.